Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. As the need to raise the debt ceiling in mid-May approaches, we will discuss the next budget hostage crisis with Randall Ray, Professor of Economics and Director of the Center for Full Employment and Price Stability at the University of Missouri. We'll also look into how cutting money from a sick economy makes no economic sense, yet due to the absence of an argument from the Democrats, the Republican narrative is dominating the discourse and driving the politics behind the deficit hoax. Then, as Tax Day approaches, Scott Klinger, the co-author of a report, Unnecessary Austerity, Unnecessary Shutdown, joins us to suggest reversing tax giveaways to the super rich that could erase the debt and end deficits. Then finally, we'll hear from an opposing argument to Juan Cole's critique of leftist opponents to intervention in Libya presented on yesterday's program. Professor of Politics and Chair of the Program in Middle East Studies at the University of San Francisco, Stephen Zunis, joins us to offer a defense of anti-interventionism in Libya. Let's turn to a discussion of the recent and next economic hostage crisis. I'm joined by L. Randall Ray, who is a professor of economics and the research director of the Center for Full Employment and Price Stability at the University of Missouri, Kansas City. He also writes regularly for the websites Benziger.com, New Economics Perspective, and New Deal 2.0. Welcome to Background Briefing, Randall Ray.
Hi.
And you were just in Bretton Woods, the site of course, the famous post-World War II economic conference, and I take it the event sponsored by George Soros was also met by some of Glenn Beck's cheer squad, I take it. They were manning the highways and byways of New Hampshire?
Yeah, there actually were some protesters there.
So you are clearly a part of some devilish, monstrous underground plot to destroy American sovereignty.
Yeah, a little strange. We're hoping it'll be remembered as the second Bretton Woods conference. And I just wanted to correct you. It was sponsored by INET, which got its initial funding from George Soros.
But right.
It's sponsored by INET.
And he made an gave an address there, a somewhat pessimistic one, I take it.
Yeah, well, quite a few people are pessimistic about the economy and the financial sector. I would guess that a pretty big minority, if not majority, think that we face a double dip and another financial crisis.
Well, we know we're going to have more of these budget hostage crises because they kicked the can down the road after this last threat to shut down the government was averted at the last minute over the weekend. And now we know that we'll have one coming up in mid-May when we reach the need to increase the debt ceiling. But I think you're talking about something beyond that, right? Because it seems to me that the whole idea of cutting money in a sick economy makes no economic sense. And is that what's going to cause a double-dip recession?
Yeah, I think the fiscal tightening, state and local governments, of course, have to tighten, and they are, and they're laying off workers, and they're cutting spending. They might even raise a few taxes and fees here and there. But what's more important is the federal government impasse, Washington budget-cutting hysteria. I think it's very likely they are going to cut some spending, even if we don't shut down the government. Of course, the reason the Republicans are holding the government hostage is because they're trying to get the Democrats to go along with large spending cuts. And as you're implying, the economy just cannot afford this. We can't afford spending cuts. We actually need spending increases.
So how did this so-called deficit hoax get foisted on the American people? It seems that, at least to my mind, one of the reasons it is continuing and growing in its momentum is it's due to the absence of an argument from the Democrats.
I think that's right. The Republicans, of course, have two reasons for whipping up the hysteria. One is that they they would like to see the economy struggle. They would like to see the unemployment rate go up because they think that will help in the next election. The second reason is that they want to use the excuse that the government can't afford to continue on the current path to cut programs that they don't like, which mostly are the ones that benefit average working Americans. Now, why would the Democrats go along with this? This is where it gets just plain bizarre. I think that there are elements of the Democratic leadership that decided really all the way back in the Clinton years that what we need is a budget crisis. If you remember Gore, it was all about Social Security. And we create the crisis because then the Democrats can claim that they're going to save the economy and protect at least some of the programs that we got in the post-war period that benefited, again, average Americans. And so they went along with this and actually helped whip up the hysteria because now they can say, hey, look what the Republicans are trying to do to you. We're going to protect at least some of the programs. We're not going to completely eliminate Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security. But, yes, we're going to have to cut them. And I think this is why we are in the situation we're in now.
Well, Randall Ray, it does feel a bit like a kind of economic form of the Stockholm syndrome. In other words, the president and the Democrats get mugged by the Republicans. And as the Republicans walk off laughing about how much money they've lifted from their wallets, the Democrats say, hey, wait a minute, I just found some extra change in my pockets.
Yeah. And, you know, once you've devoted so much effort and a whole decade to creating this belief that our federal government, which is the issuer of our currency, is running out, that it just doesn't have the money to spend anymore. And you get the population and the media and a lot of policymakers to actually believe this. Where can it stop? We've got a budget deficit that's over $1 trillion, and that's mostly because Wall Street destroyed the economy. And to cut $1 trillion out of government spending really will lead to a Great Depression.
And of course, the $38.5 billion dollars in extra cuts that were extracted by the Republicans from the White House are on top of a $40 billion in additional spending that Obama proposed and then subsequently dropped. The Republicans certainly have the momentum, and they're already sort of threatening the next round as the federal debt ceiling is supposed to be raised sometime in mid-May. Why is it then that, you know, there are some people like Warren Mosler on Wall Street and others who are saying that it doesn't matter, either short-term or long-term. What are we talking about? The real issue now is to create demand in a sick economy and to give people money to spend. And I just, again, I don't want to keep repeating myself, but where is the arguments for economic 101 going to come from so that we don't have to endure this farcical, nonsensical debate?
The economics is clear on this. There is no plausible economic argument for cutting government spending when you have unemployment, officially unemployment, near 9%. There just isn't one. So we've got down to politics and what Ryan says is morality. It is just immoral for the government to spend money on Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid because that benefits average Americans. That's immoral in his view. We ought to eliminate that kind of spending to provide the proper incentives for those people to go out and struggle more. It's a morality play. So,
yeah, even if you can't, I mean, obviously that is bizarre. But Ryan is also saying things like, for example, America is facing a situation like Greece. And That is manifestly untrue, that Greece's situation is largely due to the fact that it's a part of the European Union. And you could make the analogy that California could become the next Greece because they're constrained from in the same way that the Greeks are. But why doesn't somebody challenge just not just so much the bizarre morality, but the actual facts and statistics?
Well, of course, there are people who are doing it, and it's not just economists like me and others that you have talked to, and you mentioned Warren Mosler, who, of course, is a financial markets guy and understands the way financial markets work. There are fairly conventional economists who do worry, I think, completely erroneously about the long run. But even they are arguing there's no reason to cut spending now. So the voices are out there, but the problem is that when you go to Washington, and I went there two weeks ago or so, and met with various policymakers outside government, trying to influence government, let's say, and they say, you know what you're saying. We completely understand the economics. They say the economic arguments make no headway whatsoever because this is politics. And until the Democrats see where this is driving them, I don't think we're going to get another side to the deficit hysteria. And unless the Democrats are challenged, not from the right, but from the left, by people who want to protect working Americans, where there is a legitimate challenge to this nonsense, I don't think the economic arguments are going to get a hearing or going to win this debate, unfortunately.
Again, I'm speaking with L. Randall Ray, who is professor of economics at the University of Missouri, Kansas City. But in Congressman Ryan's plan for the 2012 budget, he's talking about reducing the top tax bracket down to 25%, which a listener pointed out to me is actually a reduction from 39.6% to 25% is in fact a reduction of 35.35%. And of course, as we know, the big earners, the hedge fund managers only pay 15% as a capital gains tax because of their carried interest, and that would be, by the same standard, a reduction of from 39.5 to that'd be a 62.12% reduction, and that's current law. So here we are, a few days away from tax day. You'd think that the average Joe out there, who's having to pony up real money and a much, much, much more than 15%, you'd think they'd be outraged.
Yeah, and of course it exposes the representatives in Washington in both parties as hypocrites, because if you really are that worried about budget deficits, you don't give tax cuts to people who aren't struggling. I mean, the top 1% it has the biggest share of income they have ever had in the United States. They're benefiting just fine. Even in the aftermath of the crisis, their incomes are going up. It makes no sense whatsoever if you're trying to reduce the budget deficit to give them more tax cuts. So, again, it makes it clear. It's not an economic argument. It's politics, and Ryan and Republicans are playing to their true constituency, which is the richest of the rich.
But in hoodwinking the American people into believing that these short-term spending cuts are good for the economy and that the long-term goal is to reduce the deficit, how long before they... You mentioned earlier, Randall Ray, there's two possible there's a possible subtext here that they don't want things to get the economy to improve, so that the Democrats and Obama lose the 2012 elections. But How long before do you think this irresponsible wrecking crew? I mean, we went through the foreign policy wrecking crew of George Bush and Dick Cheney, and that was bad enough. But this is, in plain sight, the wrecking of an economy, an economy undergoing an anemic recovery. And you'd think that the president would be fighting mad because his political fate is on the line.
Yeah, you know, Naomi Klein has called this shock doctrine, and this is probably the best example of shock doctrine that has ever been put in play. They are using the crisis to implement what would be politically extremely unpopular policies at both the federal level and the state level, taking advantage of a supposed crisis of the budgets when that crisis, of course, is created by Wall Street crashing the economy. So, you know, the good news is we are seeing people rising up and saying we're not going to take this anymore. The one good thing that I got out of my trip to Washington was meeting with people involved with labor unions, and they said, you know, we had done a poll and found that the popularity of labor unions was at a 50-year low 1 week before the events in Wisconsin. After the events in Wisconsin, it was at a 50-year high. And so I think that there still is some chance that this shock doctrine is not going to work, because people are starting to realize that what they're taking away is a middle-class living standard. If this goes through, we're not going to have an American middle class. It's already been squeezed tremendously, but it just won't exist after this.
Well, you know, even people like Warren Buffett have warned that we're heading into a plantation economy. It may well be that since our system is based on money, and the Supreme Court now has basically said allowed politics to be entirely about money, he with the most money has the most political advantage. That it's that simple. Maybe there are people that feel that way. But just in closing, again, in terms of we're mad as hell and not going to take it anymore, how could they also be now gouging us, these same people that we rescued on Wall Street, with gaming the price of basic commodities like food and oil, gasoline, which people are really feeling at the pain at the pump? There's a huge speculative bubble involved in it, and that is completely unproductive. I talked to Michael Greenberg about it the other day, and yet I don't hear anybody. Everybody's saying, oh, it's because of Libya. Hogwash, it's not. Speculators are driving up the price. Just as in the conference you just attended, they talked about how speculators are distorting the Brazilian currency.
Yeah, that's right. We saw the same thing in 2008. And Stupak and Lieberman led investigations, and the managed money, ironically, largely pension fund money, got scared and they pulled out. And you remember in the fall, or August and fall of 2008, the price of oil fell from $149 to $49. What happened is that because real estate markets are, of course, still declining, there really are only two things you can put money into. One is commodities, and the other is the stock market. So it's not surprising at all that since the crisis, commodities and stocks have gone back up. And it is purely a speculative boom. You know, there's no reason why the stock market should be going up when you're in a deep recession and recovery really has not gotten underway. And as you're saying, it's not demand for commodities and the little blip of Libya on the supply side that's driving up commodities prices. It's speculation. It's because there just isn't any other game in town that's going to get you a high return that's expected by managed money. So they've gone into commodities, and this will crash again.
But in the meantime, Randall, they are bleeding the average working stiff every time he shows up at the pump. I mean, these are the people who rescued these guys on Wall Street.
Yeah. So Americans are losing their jobs, taking wage cuts, losing their homes, and paying more for food and energy. We're squeezing them again. We did all of this in 2008, and that's how we got the crisis. So every factor is back in play, and real estate prices are even much lower than they were in 2008. So we're right there on the precipice of another collapse, and that is what is scaring a lot of the people who attended that conference.
Well, I thank you for joining us here today in Los Angeles, Dr. L. Randall Ray.
Thanks a lot.
I've been speaking with L. Randall Ray, who's a professor of economics and the research director of the Center for Full Employment and Price Stability at the University of Missouri, Kansas City. He also writes regularly for the websites Benziger.com, New Economics Perspectives, and New Deal 2.0. We're going to take a brief station break, and we'll be back talking with the co-author of Unnecessary Austerity, Unnecessary Shutdown.
Bretton Woods, Bretton Woods, we're going to have a meeting at Bretton Woods. All the trees line the street, there's bound to be lots of good things to eat at Bretton Woods. New Hampshire is lovely this time.